Okay, so this is all about obviously Trump and the Epstein files, which I don't know if you have been following this all that closely. It's in the British, it's in the UK news. In fact, it's in the world news. Stuff's happening so fast; it's hard to keep up. Just this afternoon, news that there's a Democrat move for new legislation so that any five senators can demand the release of files. Now, normally you would think, well, this won't pass because the Republicans have got the majority in the House, but it might pass if some Republicans rebel against Trump, and three already have. So I've been sort of following this via clips on YouTube from, just to make it fun, from liberal comedians who present a lot of the late shows on the US channel. So you've got Jon Stewart and Ronny Cheng on The Daily Show, Stephen Colbert on The Late Show, Late Night with Seth Meyers, and stuff like that. Now, I realize that I'm getting this stuff because this is YouTube's preferential algorithm at work. And right-wing Republicans, MAGA people, won't see any of this sort of, you know, soft left stuff. What they get is Joe Rogan, Dave Rubin, Ben Shapiro, people like that, whose ratings are in the millions. So maybe I picked this subject of MAGA's mega meltdown because YouTube makes it seem more significant than it really is. But it's also fascinating in a horrible and slightly prurient way. So I thought tonight I would discuss, not necessarily in any sort of chronological order, because it's there's so much stuff it's really confusing, but generally what's been going on. And after that, maybe look at the more tricky question of, you know, why, on in fact, whether any of this really matters in the socialist long view perspective. I can imagine you all thinking no, but hold your horses. Now, several days ago, by accident, I was talking to some people about this, and through them, I managed to acquire online a leaked copy of some of these Epstein files. In fact, including Epstein's so-called black book containing details of his many, many contacts, many of them recognizable celebs, business types, even renowned scientists. I also obtained documents related to the prosecution of Ghislaine Maxwell and the supporting testimony of Virginia Giuffre, which that's something else which the Senate is demanding the release of. And most disturbingly, I acquired a 2016 California court deposition by one Katie Johnson, citing rape and sexual abuse by Jeffrey Epstein and Donald Trump, at the same events, committed when Johnson was 13 years old, and they knew that she was 13 years old. This court deposition makes pretty shocking reading, I can assure you. Katie Johnson dropped the lawsuit later the same year and failed to appear at an organized press conference, saying that she was in fear for her life. These documents were leaked on Reddit, and they are still there for anyone to download. They look authentic, but I'm no judge. And of course, the accusations remain unproven. Had they been proven in a court of law, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that Trump would not be president now. He would be in prison for life as a convicted paedophile. So this is the scandal of the Epstein files, and it's gripped America for weeks. And Trump seems to become more and more ensnared the more he struggles to escape from it. Thinking about this, I was reminded of that quote of Lenin's, there are decades when nothing happens and there are weeks when decades happen. I mean, he was talking about revolutionary times, but there are also periods, non-revolutionary periods, when time just seems to dilate as if by decades, when it's only really a matter of weeks or months. commonly people say online that it's hard to recollect that the Trump regime is only 7 months. It's only been 6 months in office, 7 months in office. It's been an absolute roller coaster. If you think of the blistering onslaught of first day executive orders, the appointment of unqualified TV anchors to head the FBI and the Pentagon, a vaccine skeptic as Secretary of Health, the withdrawal of the US from the World Health Organization, UNESCO, and of course the Paris Climate Agreement, the ridiculous Elon Musk and the Doge sackings of government staff, the attempt to subvert the 14th Amendment and end birthright citizenship, the ICE raids, mass expulsions to El Salvador and alligator Alcatraz, the insane Liberation Day tariff blitz, followed by an immediate market crash, the vulgar Oval Office bullying of Vladimir Zelensky, the demands to annex Panama, Greenland, even Canada, and to ethnically cleanse Gaza and redevelop it into upscale beachfront properties, then the Iran bombings, even the big beautiful bill which robs the poor and gives tax cuts to the rich. They all recede in the rearview mirror like ancient history as the Trump regime continues with its foot on the floor to speed from one fiasco to the next. All of that in just 6 months. But even so, all of this, or most of this anyway, was lapped up by the MAGA base as evidence that Trump and co. were actually doing something, that they're truly disruptors of the established liberal order, the so-called deep state, and the hegemony of the rich elite. More widely, his approval ratings have continually declined, while disapproval ratings have soared. But that didn't matter so long as his base was solidly behind him. They were delighted by his attack on Columbia, Harvard, and other universities, which they view as the training fields of the next elites. They're not bothered by his repeated accusations that Obama was a traitor, that he was, quote-unquote, sedacious, and that Obama was a hoaxer. Just the other day, Trump made a nonsensical promise to cut medical bills by more than 1,000%. They can't have taken that seriously. They must have realized that, in that case, drug companies would have to pay you 10 times the value of the drug for you to take it. But they don't care. They don't care about any rubbish that comes out of his mouth. They're perfectly happy that he extorted money recently from the liberal CBS Paramount and closed down one of his most vociferous critics, Stephen Colbert, on The Late Show. They probably even cheered when he suggested on Truth Social that he might next go after other liberal critics and comedians like Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, Jon Stewart, Seth Meyer, John Oliver. To understand what this would be, the impact of this, it's a bit like the government in this country intervening to and threatening to close the BBC down, and then axe "Have I Got News for You?" And then put Private Eye on the proscribed list. That's what it looks like. So as I was saying, the MAGA base was perfectly happy with all of this because, you know, this was just winding up the liberals and the woke, after all. But then came the Epstein files, and in particular this notorious client list, which the Attorney General Pam Bondi had stated back in February that it was already on her desk for review. But in July, the FBI claimed that this client list didn't actually exist. So who was right? This scandal was a wholly different matter as far as the MAGA base were concerned. If you cast your mind back to the 2016 presidential election with Hillary Clinton versus Trump, you'll remember that QAnon-backed Pizzagate hysteria, all about a supposed Democrat conspiracy to cover up for an elite paedophile ring who were trafficking children in the cellar of a pizza parlor. This pizza parlor didn't have a cellar, incidentally. But up to 50% of the MAGA base did believe the Pizzagate story. And, well, there's nothing like a paedophile conspiracy to bring out the torches and pitchforks. It outrages any decent human being, and especially offends the outright sense of traditional family values. And what gave the Pizzagate conspiracy a certain plausibility was that there was already a real-life conspiracy involving Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, which, of course, as we all well know, implicated Prince Andrew, amongst others. So it seems a little bit weird, with hindsight, that Trump and his buddies were so keen to lean into this Pizzagate conspiracy theory at the time, when Trump knew very well that his close ties with Epstein were all over the media. There have been plenty of photos and videos of them together. So this seems to be him working at cross-purposes. And this is the source of the fracture that's growing between Trump, who's the billionaire's best friend. And let's remember, he is a convicted sex pest. The fracture between him and the MAGA base, who seem to be obsessed with paedophiles under every bed. Why did he do it? There's a very interesting young YouTuber called Brendan Miller, who has some rather silly glasses, but he has a very good analysis of political trends. I think he's a sort of liberal, but his analysis of political trends is very good, and he does one very good stuff on the MAGA movement. And he argues that this wasn't a conscious decision by Trump to lean into conspiracism. He argues that populism and conspiracism, if that is even a word, are part of each other and have the same root. He says, I quote, "It's not just that Trump has used conspiracy theories to gain attention and support. It's that they are, at a fundamental level, the model for his whole politics." Miller then goes on to describe psychology studies in many countries which find a link between populism and the conspiracy mentality. It seems that they go together and they both appeal to the same sort of person. What is that person? Well, apparently it's someone who has what's called generalized dispositional distrust. This is a psychological term for people who don't trust any mainstream media or authority. These people also have a need for what's called cognitive closure, which translates as a desire for clear, strong answers, not messy or complicated or ambiguous ones. And these people also have what's called a Manichaean moral view, which breaks down everything into simple black and white or good or evil. You don't need me to tell you that, of course, real life is messy and lots of greys, and you very often don't get cognitive closure. But with these people, it's a very simplistic sort of worldview. And Miller also says that populism and many conspiracies also share a basic narrative structure. Here's where I think it's interesting from our point of view. The narrative, basic narrative structure, both framing the world as divided into a small, oppressive and powerful group on top and the innocent, exploited people at the bottom. Miller seems to see this as us and them mentality as part of the problem. This is quite curious, really. I would say this is Miller's own liberalism obscuring a genuine class reality. The world really is controlled by a secretive and oppressive elite. There's no secret about it. It's not a conspiracy in itself. It's very plain for everyone to see. The problem that the people at the bottom have got is that they don't know what to do about it. And instead of organizing for socialism, of course, as we know, they follow shills and con men like Trump. Tess Owen, writing The Guardian, doesn't see any inevitable link between populism and the conspiracy mindset, but she says they're perfectly happy to get into bed together when it suits them. In Trump In Trump's case, she says, he spent the last 10 years building a coalition of largely conspiracy-minded people in the US. So in order for him to keep these people engaged and donating and going to his speeches and voting for him and voting for Republicans, he has to keep pressing the conspiracy theories. So a kind of codependency develops, which, according to Miller, that's just built in anyway. I'm inclined to agree that he's probably right about that. But according to Tess Owen, this codependency develops. A John Lewis, a research fellow at George Washington University's program on extremism, I'm quoting the Guardian article now, told the Guardian that as QAnon and MAGA have become increasingly intertwined in recent years, we have seen the embrace of increasingly fringe conspiracies and extremist narratives like Pizzagate and Save the Children by mainstream political figures. So what's happening is that when you cultivate the QAnon conspiracy movement, you're feeding a beast that can turn on you. The article goes on, the scale of the current MAGA meltdown certainly shows the significance of Epstein conspiracies within the broader QAnon pantheon, and should lay bare just how deeply the disease of the QAnon movement has seeped into a Republican Party which has welcomed its most conspiratorial, anti-Semitic, reactionary fringe into Congress and the executive branch with open arms. It concludes, this was a conspiracy that Donald Trump, Pam Bondi, and these MAGA extremists have been fanning the flames of for the last several years, and now the chickens are coming home to roost. The problem that they've got, of course, which many people have pointed out, is that conspiracy theories are always aimed at the people in power. If you use those conspiracy theorists to get into power, then you become the people in power. You become the very thing that conspiracy theories exist to attack. You become the deep state. You become the enemy. It's not actually so very different from why we say revolutionaries should not serve in capitalist governments. They become the very thing they're fighting against. So the MAGA camp is now in turmoil, and some Trump stalwarts are in open rebellion, including that mad lunatic in the bison horns, whose name is actually Jacob Chansley, described as a QAnon shaman, who was convicted for the January 6th storming of the Capitol and subsequently pardoned by Trump. He's got all kinds of things to say about Trump now, including the fact that he's full of shit, basically. And Trump is actually on the back foot in all this. He can't get away from the Epstein scandal no matter where he goes. Even when he goes to Scotland to open golf courses, he was pestered about the Epstein files from the journalists there. And his penchant for suing people, although it has been successful in the past in the case of Disney and also Paramount, might have led him to take on more than he can chew, because he's just decided to sue the Murdoch empire. The Murdoch empire, Rupert Murdoch, is Trump's main media backer. And now Trump has decided to sue Rupert Murdoch for $10 billion. And this was because of the revelation of a rather lurid birthday card that Trump supposedly wrote for Epstein and drew a picture on it. I won't go into details, but it was pretty lurid. Trump's denounced it as fake news, of course, but it was the Wall Street Journal that printed it, which Trump now calls a useless rag. And he's suing the Wall Street Journal, but far from being cowed by the lawsuit, the Wall Street Journal immediately responded almost the next day with a fresh revelation that Attorney General Pam Bondi had told Trump back in May that he is definitely in the Epstein files, in fact that the files are riddled with references to him, which we already knew or suspected, not least because Elon Musk had already said that during his fratricidal spat with the president all those decades ago, back in April. Suing the Murdoch empire seems like a bit of a reckless move, even for Trump. But as president, he does have the power to grant or remove licenses, including broadcasting licenses, which wouldn't affect the Wall Street Journal, one part of the Murdoch empire, but it could affect Murdoch's Fox Corporation. So there is that. But more recently, in fact, just days ago, perhaps more significantly in some ways, opposition to Trump has emerged from a completely unexpected direction. Matt Stone and Trey Parker, the billionaire creators of South Park, as well as the Book of Mormon, they've just done a $1.5 billion deal with Paramount for a new South Park series, the first of which aired this week. And it's stunned America, and it's infuriated the White House. In this episode, Trump is portrayed as himself, not as another character, as has previously been done, but he's portrayed as himself, as a neo-Saddam Hussein, copulating in bed with the devil, threatening to cancel everyone, including Jesus, and including a hyper-realistic AI deepfake of Trump stark naked and having quasi-religious conversations in the desert with his own talking micro-penis. Now, left-wing talk shows can be ignored by the Republican base, but South Park, I venture to suggest, is a different matter, because at nearly 30 years old, it is almost a national institution. It's famous for poking fun, well, actually downright insulting, left and right. So it's very far from being seen as lefty woke. It's also very funny. We know Trump is a narcissist who believes he's a genius and a statesman whose legs bestride the ocean, and who expects world leaders to grovel before him. All this hubris kind of evaporates in the face of public ridicule. And South Park is the perfect vehicle because so many people watch it. Parker and Stone mock him as the emperor, literally with no clothes. Everyone knows that Trump likes to intimidate through billion-dollar lawsuits. Parker and Stone must somehow think they're untouchable and that Trump will just look even more ridiculous if he does try to sue them. What's more, they write each episode the week before, so they're able to respond in the show to whatever he does next. Okay, so I could talk about a lot more of this, but I'm not going to because it'll take too long. So I'll just move to the last section. Why does it matter? And, you know, as I said at the start, you probably think, no, it doesn't really matter, not from a socialist point of view. I think it does matter because what Trump shows is that while nobody can make capitalism better, you know, by forcing it to change its essential nature, making it behave differently, there are plenty of people who can make capitalism worse than it needs to be, and I think Trump is one of them. People say sometimes that when America sneezes, the world catches a cold. What happens when America loses its mind? It's actually pretty dangerous when someone as mercurial and self-regarding as Trump has their hands on the nuclear launch codes. And he's also somebody who's rejected global warming as a hoax, while the world is moving closer and closer to environmental disaster. What if Trump eventually gives way to someone even worse than him, even more ruthless, even more unhinged? J.D. Vance possibly comes to mind. The Guardian article, concludes with a view of one researcher that the MAGA meltdown won't last. He says, the culture war will move on to its next target, and the rage machine will follow with conspiracies and vitriol. It's much easier to be angry at an immigrant than to wonder whether you've been lied to for the last 8 years. Well, all right, that's the Guardian's view. I think that underrates the enduring malevolence of the conspiracy mindset. They don't forget, and they don't forgive. But for MAGA more generally, Trump will sooner or later go the way of all political leaders and be seen as a busted flush. He promised to lower prices, and instead prices went up. He promised a lot of things that never happened. He blamed the corrupt, secretive elites, but in the end, well, he was just one of them. America's democratic mechanisms might even course correct at next November's midterm elections, ceding House majorities to the Democrats and rendering Trump a lame duck president who can't get any further measures passed. But that could unite the Trump base in opposition again and possibly result in two further years of civil unrest, with Trump now posing as a martyr. We've talked before about whether MAGA is symptomatic of a permanent global rightward shift, or whether it's all just another swing of the capitalist political pendulum. I would suggest another analogy, that these little shifts, and they are small in historical terms, are the outward signs of tectonic movements in class consciousness. Just to illustrate what I mean, when I joined the party, it was rare to hear anyone else say that Labour and Tory were the same. That was really quite a fringe view. You didn't hear people talk about global inequality as a political issue. It was regarded rather as a sort of sad but inevitable fact of life. And in the so-called boomer years, post-1960, people, at least people in the West, were more afraid of nuclear war than anything else, and had no great reason to hate capitalism itself, because it seemed to be working, and they generally expected to have a better life than their parents. So that was then, and this is now, and everything, I think, is different. Class inequality isn't just a political issue, it's being rubbed in our faces. Politicians not only are just the same, or regarded as the same, they have no credibility. And young workers expect their lives to be worse, not better. And capitalism seems to be destroying the planet. So in the tectonic analogy I used, the real forces of change are out of sight and hard to detect inside people's minds, until one day they produce an earthquake that nobody was expecting. That's why we have to continue doing what we're doing, even if we don't seem to be having any effect, because we don't know what small thing could trigger the earthquake.